Well, I thank you for asking me as we approach this solemn subject, and it is a solemn subject this year. We think perhaps quite often on the types of Christ, but here we have the types of Antichrist, that great one that will stand against him and in his place in the eyes of many. And these things are very solemn. Just as the types of Christ and indeed of other things are not total, that is, there are some parts that do fit and some parts that don't fit, so that is true with our subject in these types. Though I'm not going to be concerned with those other aspects, we've got more than enough to concern us tonight. Those people often fix sermons on 3 points. Well, I was somewhat staggered to discover that there are 20 points. So we're not going to have very long on each one. And in fact, it works out as a sort of chain so often, but there are specific links as we go through. So we trust that the Lord will help us in these things. Doubtless during the course of this year, I'm sure they're already familiar passages, but the things that we find in Revelation, and especially Revelation chapter 14, 2 Thessalonians, will become much more familiar with us. Revelation 13, I should have said. And our focus tonight is going to be particularly on Isaiah and chapter 14, and we will be looking at pretty much the whole chapter, actually. Obviously, thinking of Nebuchadnezzar, we will also be referring back to some of the things that we were looking at in more detail last year with regards to Daniel. So I've actually got 4 Bibles here in the hope that that will make referring to things much more straightforward, at least as far as I'm concerned. Well, let's see what the Word of God has to say to us. The first point I want to make is that, this is by way of introduction, that this prophecy we find in verse 28 was given in the year that King Ahaz died. In the year that King Ahaz died was this burden. Now that's significant, because at that point Babylon, as far as Judah was concerned, was pretty insignificant. If we think back to a few chapters before, we've got in chapters 7 and 8 and 9 of Isaiah, we've got the great threat to Judah being Assyria. Assyria has linked with Israel, the northern kingdom, and they are sweeping through like a flood. They look as though they're going to completely wipe out God's people in Judah. Babylon is nowhere to be seen. But we know, of course, that God prophesied at that point that there would be that one born of a virgin, that by the time he was weaned, Assyria would have passed on. The land would be forsaken of both their kings. And so it was. But it's significant, isn't it, that as we think of this Antichrist, we have Christ versus Antichrist. This great tragedy. And We have Assyria mentioned, of course, in our chapter as well. God says, verse 25, that I will break the Assyrian in my land, and upon my mountains tread him underfoot. Then shall his yoke depart from off them, and his burden depart from off their shoulders. As we're thinking of that, we need to remember, and although it's applied to Assyria, it is true to all God's enemies, that he is over all these things. As we read in chapter 10 and verse 5, O Assyrian, the rod of mine anger and the staff of their hand is mine indignation. I will send him against an hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge to take the spoil and to take the prey and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. Howbeit, he meaneth not so. Neither doth his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and cut off nations, not a few. He thinks he's in control. God says, no, he's not. No, he's not. When he has worked my pleasure, he will be removed. Shall the axe boast itself against him that heweth therewith? And so that is true. But as we have this prophecy given, therefore, in this chapter, we have the destruction of Babylon. So we have the destruction of Antichrist. And in both cases, we see that the Antichrist and their kingdom, the power of Babylon, have both got to come before they can be destroyed. So it's a very wonderful prophecy in that sense. It's leaping ahead of where we might expect to be. Well, we find that the Antichrist will come in with his flatteries. We were thinking of that, weren't we, back in Daniel chapter 11, and there in verse 22 we find, and the arms of a flood shall they be overtaken from before him, they shall be broken. Verse 21. And in his estate shall stand up a vile person, to whom they shall not give the honour of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. And with the arms of a flood shall they be overflown from before him, and shall be broken. Yea, also the prince of the covenant. And after the league made with him, he shall work deceitfully. Shall he shall come up and shall become strong with a small people. So he comes in with his flatteries. In Isaiah chapter 39, we have not at this point Nebuchadnezzar, but a previous king of Babylon. So after Hezekiah has been raised up from his sickness, and the king of Babylon sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he had heard that he had been sick and was recovered. And Hezekiah was glad of them, and showed them the house of his precious things, the silver and the gold and the spices and the precious ointment, and all the house of his armour, and all that was found in his treasures. There was nothing in his house, nor in all his dominion, that Hezekiah showed them not. Then came Isaiah the prophet unto King Hezekiah, and said unto him, What said these men? And from whence came they unto thee? And Hezekiah said, They are come from a far country unto me, even from Babylon. Even their presence is a flattery. They're from a far country. No danger here. Then said he, What have they seen in thine house? And Hezekiah answered, All that is in mine house have they seen. There is nothing among my treasures that I have not showed them. Then said Isaiah unto Hezekiah, Hear the word of the Lord of hosts. Behold, the days come, that all that is in thine house, and that which thy fathers have laid up in store until this day, shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, saith the Lord. And of thy sons that shall issue from thee, which thou shalt beget, shall they be taken away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. And then most solemnly, then said Hezekiah to Isaiah, Good is the word of the Lord which thou hast spoken. He said, Moreover, for there shall be peace and truth in my days. It's a very solemn words. Very solemn words. It will be good because there will be peace and truth in my days. I've read that because we need to beware. We need to be looking. And that, of course, is the whole purpose of this year's studies. He will come to take the treasure, to take the peace of the church. We need to be prepared, and we need to be looking to the Lord in these things. And I know, as I said, that isn't actually Nebuchadnezzar, but it is his forebears. And we see these things, don't we, as Paul speaks about Levi giving tithes through Abraham. The seed is there, the seed is sown. And Babylon is on the way up. And the Lord has foretold it. And that's our next point. These things are foretold. Chapter 24 of Isaiah. Behold, the Lord maketh the earth empty, and maketh it waste, and turneth it upside down, and scattereth abroad the inhabitants thereof. And it shall be, as with the people, so with the priest, as with the servant, so with his master, as with the maid, so with her mistress, as with the buyer, so with the seller, as with the lender, so with the borrower, as with the taker of usury, so with the giver of usury to him. The land shall be utterly emptied and utterly spoiled, for the Lord hath spoken this word. The earth mourneth and fadeth away, the world languisheth and fadeth away, the haughty people of the earth do languish. It's a complete removal. It's a complete attack. Everything will be sullied. Everything will be damaged. As we come to the Antichrist, we see that his is a total power. All nations are under his spell. Obviously not every single one in those nations, but the whole world is sucked away, those whose names are not in the book of life. As the king, Nebuchadnezzar, takes that power of Judah, we find him putting out the eyes. It's very solemn, isn't it? He puts out the eyes of Zedekiah. You find that amongst other places in Jeremiah chapter 20. And he puts out the eyes as the people, as he sees his children killed. Struck me, sorry, that's the wrong reference, Jeremiah 39 verse 6. Then the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah in Riblah before his eyes. Also the king of Babylon slew all the nobles of Judah. Moreover, he put out Zedekiah's eyes and bound him with chains to carry him to Babylon. As we come to Paul speaking of that wicked one that shall arise to the Thessalonians, he says about that power, that deceitfulness, that he will come. That deceitfulness, as it were, blinds the eyes. It comes in with those flatteries again, doesn't it? Those deceitfulnesses. And for this cause, God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie. What is done literally by Nebuchadnezzar is done spiritually by the Antichrist. And he will end that worship. That was the reference that I just gave in Jeremiah 20, verse 5. Moreover, I will deliver all the strength of this city and all the labours thereof and all the precious things thereof and all the treasures of the kings of Judah will I give into the hand of their enemies, which will spoil them and take them and carry them to Babylon. We find that all of those precious vessels are carried away, carried off. Of course, they are to be used very solemnly later on. In Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, speaking of the Antichrist, we find that he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease, and for the overspreading of abominations he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. In its place there will be false worship. In Revelation 13 verse 4, they worship the dragon which gave power unto the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Verse 8, and all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Paul says that this one opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, of course, was a very great power. And he attracted to himself, as it were, that almost godlike status. He overthrew, as we've seen, that true worship of God and set up idol worship there. And of course, there was that particular worship of the image. The image, of course, is mentioned as a act of Antichrist back in Revelation. Deceiveth them that dwell on the earth, saying that they should, that they, saying to them that dwell on the earth, that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast. That the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Well, Nebuchadnezzar's huge image didn't have life in itself, of course, but those that didn't worship were to be killed. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 70 cubits, and the breadth of it thereof 6 cubits. Now, these are huge dimensions. This is a vast skyscraper of an image. We tend to lose sight of it, and it's very grotesque as well if you actually look at those measurements. But then the command goes out. A herald cried out, "To you it is commanded, O people, nations and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the mute, the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, etc., and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace." The power of this image is being seen. The power of the king is being seen, and it's against the worship of God. He also begins to take over the character of the people. He takes over their identity. Immediately after that, in Revelation 14, he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond. I paused there. We saw that long couplet, didn't we, in Isaiah, as he speaks about the destruction of Judah and all those opposites. We have the same thing here. What's he saying? This is going to be total. Doesn't matter what you're thinking about, everyone is going to be sucked into this. There is nobody excluded. Rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. There is a similarity, isn't there, as the identity of those who were carried off into Babylon have their names changed. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. Now you'll notice that every one of those Jewish names ends in El, God, or Yah. Jehovah, Yah, the same. And what are they changed to? They're changed to names after the false gods of Babylon. And we have Belteshazzar, Bel, the great god of Babylon, given to Daniel. These things are so significant. The power, the authority of God is being sapped away, and a false mark, a false thing is being placed. What was the purpose of that? It was only those that had that mark that were able, we read, to trade. Focusing back now on Isaiah 14, we find that trade is important in our chapter. We notice that in verse 4, it's the golden city that has ceased. Wealth and trade is mentioned as after the destruction of the Babylon in Revelation chapter 18. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buyeth their merchandise any more. The merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones and pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and all fine wood and all manner of vessels of ivory and all manner of vessels of most precious wood and of brass and iron and marble and cinnamon and odours and ointments and frankincense and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and beasts and sheep and horses and chariots and slaves and souls of men. The merchants of these things, which were made rich by her, shall stand afar off. Not only is there this trade, but there is great power here. In verse 5 of Revelation 13, there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him. Power was given unto him. The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. Isaiah 14 verse 5. But the power was there before the Lord broke it. Paul speaks in verse 4 of the one who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God. These are things of vast power. And we know that particularly applied to Nebuchadnezzar. In that, as he explains that great vision that Nebuchadnezzar had of the head of gold and so on, this is the interpretation that Daniel gives. Thou, O king, art a king of kings. Now that's very significant, isn't it? We know who the king of kings is. But one speaking under the revelation of God calls this heathen king a king of kings. And the Antichrist is certainly one who looks to call himself the king of kings. Thou, O king, art a king of kings. He is, of course, literally above the other kings of the empires and the reigns around. For the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power and strength and glory. Now, God has given it to him. But he has this great power. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. It's a very striking thing. And Nebuchadnezzar built up this great empire, the greatest empire really that the world had known to that point. We find that the whole earth is at rest in verse 7 of Isaiah 14 and is quiet. The whole earth has, as it were, been taken over by Nebuchadnezzar and his empire, and now that has reached the end, it is at peace. John in the Revelation says, he deceiveth them that dwell on the earth. And clearly the idea there is that this is the whole earth. The earth has come under the influence of this wicked man. Nebuchadnezzar, I am not suggesting, was particularly using his influence in a wicked way, but that was the outcome, to some extent, certainly against the worship of God. When we come to the Antichrist, that is very definitely his purpose. He is setting himself up as one who is God-like. Daniel, again, speaking of the power of Nebuchadnezzar to Belshazzar, says, and thou, king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honour. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would he slew, and whom he would he kept alive, and whom he would he set up, and whom he would he put down. What have we got here? These are the attributes of God, aren't they, in a sense? He is set up as one who is like God. That's the accusation, isn't it? Of Lucifer. Verse 12, Isaiah 14. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. Note that. My throne will be above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend unto the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Staggering things in place of our Lord Jesus Christ. What did Paul say? Who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. John in the Revelation speaks of him as fighting against the one who sat on the horse. I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. Such is the power of this one. But there we see his wrath against the Saviour. His wrath is mentioned again in Isaiah 14, verse 6. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke. He that ruled the nations in anger. This one is against the church in particular. Revelation 13:7. It was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. There is that anger, there is that opposition, there is that persecution. We know, don't we, that there was that persecution of the Jews in Babylon. Well, here, the Jews and the church are persecuted, fought against in Daniel chapter 8. We find speaking of this one, verse 23. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. The dragon sets up the beast. But not by his own power. And he shall destroy wonderfully. And shall prosper and practice and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. And through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand. And he shall magnify himself in his heart. And by peace shall destroy many. He shall also stand up against the prince of princes. That wrath, that antagonism. And this is, of course, this persecution, this opposition, this destruction of the kingdom and the city is spoken of throughout the prophecies of Isaiah and Jeremiah and elsewhere, and we see in both the fulfilment of these things. Why? Well, it says Paul warns us, that ye be not soon shaken in mind or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter. As from us, as that the day of Christ is at hand. For that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. That will be these things, and of course, the Lord speaks of them in great detail in Matthew 24 and in other places too. We have that rod, that scepter, exercised. Nebuchadnezzar was a great ruler, no doubt about that. And this one will take the rod, which truly is the scepter of Jesus Christ. What do we find in these things? Everything is corrupted. Everything is twisted. Everything is crooked. Everything is, in his whole character, Paul says, that wicked, doesn't he? We've just read those words, the man of sin, the son of perdition. There is a twistedness, there is a wickedness. And then we come to that most terrible name, really. And then shall that wicked be revealed. But in verse 5 of Isaiah 14, the Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked. There are these analogies as you go through. I was amazed as I went through and found there's just so many different links. These things that the Lord knew. I mean, I said about the wonder that these things are before the power of Babylon was set up, and clearly before the power of Antichrist was set up. But in a real sense, I mean, these are before the power of Christ, aren't they? We know that he's coming. Isaiah glorious in telling us that. We've already mentioned that he has already foretold these things. But these little things, the Lord knows in great detail, right back in his wonder for our guidance, for our instruction. Or may we be much seeking these things then. But you'll notice that he, the Lord, Jehovah, hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. I read the first half of 2 Thessalonians 2 verse 8, but it continues, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. And when will that? For the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way. The Lord is in control in these things. It's the message that the church must know. It's the message that the Lord's people must know back in Isaiah's time. The Lord has his hand on it. And so he can say exactly when these things will come to an end. Yes, they're going to go into captivity. I know this isn't our concern in a sense tonight. But yet in 70 years, they will return. In 70 years, somebody called Cyrus will bring them back. These are wonderful things. He who let it. He who is the one who controls and prevents and allows these things are revealed before the end. Before the end, we're beginning to come to the end of the life of Nebuchadnezzar. But in the case of Nebuchadnezzar, God is very merciful, isn't he? He gives him, as it were, a warning. He gives him a sort of proto-end. We've seen his arrogance. We've seen him taking to himself the power of God. We've seen him taking all these things. And we find in chapter 4 of Daniel that at the end of 12 months he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. And the king spake and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built? for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honour of my majesty. Look how great I am. Look how wonderful I am. While the word was in his mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. He who will let, will let. And they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee, until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar. And he was driven from men and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. Seems to me that this is spoken of in our chapter 2. They that see thee, verse 16, shall narrowly look upon thee, and consider thee, saying, Is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms? This apparent lunatic, this outcast, this one who reached up to heaven, as it were, there's something else, isn't there? This one who was driven out as a beast speaks to us of the one who is described as the beast there in the Revelation. These are strange things. But God to Nebuchadnezzar was merciful. Of course, there is no such mercy extended to the Antichrist, to that true beast. Well, we've already drawn some lessons from what is actually given to us as the ending of these things, and that's to what we must turn now. We'll read together verses 4 and 5 of Isaiah 14. That thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, How hath the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased? The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the sceptre of the rulers. It's come to an end. We have wise words, don't we, spoken in Proverbs 29. He that being often reproved hardeneth his neck shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. Well, if that's true of earthly kings, how much more must it be of this one who has been set up in this great and terrible power? The mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he that now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause, God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie. The end is sealed. That's to our encouragement. Let no man deceive you by any means. The man of sin will be revealed, but he will be removed. Isaiah 14:15, yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pits. We have that ultimate destiny, don't we, revealed? To the sides of the pits. And we have that ultimate destiny revealed, don't we, in Revelation chapter 20. The devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and shall be tormented day and night for ever and ever. Friends, whatever the suffering of the church, it will be as nothing to those that end up in that place. As nothing to what he suffers, who has wrought such devastation. This is marked out in Isaiah 14 in a strange way as well. We have, all through the kings, we have those tributes given, don't we, at the end of their lives. Those that have done ill, those that have done badly, and we find that they were buried with their fathers, or their forefathers, or they weren't buried with their forefathers. But here, there is no honour. There is no grave. Isaiah 14, verse 20. Thou shalt not be joined with them in burial, because thou hast destroyed thy land, and slain thy people. The seed of evildoers shall never be renowned. Prepare. Now, I take it that Nebuchadnezzar would personally have been buried in a very large grave. I have no particular archaeological evidence to say that, but I think it's inconceivable, and I don't think this is a prophecy at this point of Nebuchadnezzar himself. But surely we can take note of the fact that there is no memorial remaining. Verse 9. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. Or they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials. The worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? Verse 16. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee, and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms? Now, we applied that to him as the beast, but it obviously applies particularly here in death. That's the situation. It's very solemn. And as we have these references, it seems to me that we're not dealing with Nebuchadnezzar, but we're dealing with that Antichrist that should come. We find too that there is no heir. Verse 21. Prepare slaughter for his children, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise, nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with cities. For I will rise up against them, saith the Lord of hosts, and cut off from Babylon the name and the remnant and son and nephew, saith the Lord. Well, we know, don't we, how the kingdom of Babylon ended. the words of Daniel in chapter 5. But thou hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written, and this is the interpretation of the thing. God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Thou art weighed in the balances and found wanting. Thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. The progeny, the reigning house of Nebuchadnezzar, is destroyed. Finally, we have to think about the destruction of his city. It's a great thing, isn't it? Again, we find it in verse 4. How hath the oppressor ceased? The golden city ceased. These things are, as it were, tied up together. One cannot fail without the other. Well, of course, there is a very straightforward link here with that destruction to which chapters are devoted in that great revelation. The cry goes out. Babylon is fallen. Babylon the Great is fallen. It's fallen and has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and the cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Remember what we read? I will also make it a possession for the bittern. The birds are there in Isaiah. The cry goes up. Alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and decked with gold, the golden city, and precious stones and pearls, for in 1 hour so great riches are come to naught. And every shipmaster and all the company in ships and sailors and as many as trade by sea stood afar off and cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like unto this great city? And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city, wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea by reason of her costliness. For in 1 hour she is made desolate. And a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and cast it into the sea, saying, thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down, and shall be found no more at all. And the voice of harpers and musicians and of pipers and trumpeters shall be heard no more at all in thee, and no craftsman of whatever soever craft he be shall be found any more in thee, and the sound of a millstone shall be heard no more at all in thee. And the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee, etc., etc. Now, I've read all that because Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar was a great city of culture. The Hanging Baskets of Babylon, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, one of the great wonders of the world. And in fairness to him, when he said this great Babylon which I have built, that was pretty much true, humanly speaking. He had done tremendous things. He had transformed a little, tiny capital into the centre of the world. God says, comes to an end. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints, and of all that were slain upon the world. But again, we find this, don't we, in Isaiah. Verse 22, "For I will rise up against them, saith the Lord of hosts, and cut off from Babylon the name and the remnant and son and nephew, saith the Lord. I will also make it a possession for the bittern and pools of water, and I will sweep it with the besom of destruction, saith the Lord of hosts." This great opulence comes to nothing. Indeed, this has already been foretold. In chapter 13, it is the burden of Babylon. And we have the destruction there even more keenly put forth. Verse 19, first of all. "And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah." What was left? Nothing at all. And surely it's wonderful and significant that that great judgment that came on them is instanced here, as God instances that great destruction of Babylon in Revelation 2. But speaking of the literal Babylon, he continues, "It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Neither shall the Arabian pitch tent there, neither shall the shepherds make their fold there. But the wild beasts of the desert shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of doleful creatures and owls." We had those mentioned, didn't we? The birds shall dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there. And the wild beasts of the island shall cry in their desolate houses, and dragons in their pleasant palaces, and her time is near to come, and her days shall not be prolonged. And in verses 10 and 11, I want us to think of, because we could think of that as being simply the literal city. But in verse 10, God says, "For the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light." This seems to be speaking of something much more than just Nebuchadnezzar's city. "The sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. And I will punish the world for their evil, and the wicked for their iniquity. And I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and I will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. Therefore," verse 13, "I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall remove out of her place in the wrath of the day of the Lord of hosts, and in the day of his fierce anger." And if there were any doubt that this is speaking of that final destruction of Antichrist and of that great day of the Lord's coming, we have verse 12, which we missed out then. "I will make a man more precious than fine gold, even a man than the golden wedge of Ophir." So these things have already been foretold. Really, chapters 13 and 14, of course, of Isaiah belong together. Well, what are we to take from this? That's the end of our study. I hope it's not been too exhausting or confusing. But what do we take from these things? That's the important point, isn't it? Verse 14, verse 1. "For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob, and will yet choose Israel, and set them in their own land. And the stranger shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. And the people shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Lord for servants and handmaids. And they shall take them captives, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over the oppressors. And it shall come to pass in the day that the Lord shall give thee rest from thy sorrow, and from thy fear, and from the hard bondage wherein thou wast made to serve, that thou shalt take up this proverb. So this is the point. As Babylon is overcome, as they are brought back literally from captivity, they have that rest. They are brought back into the kingdom. As the Antichrist, as his power is brought to an end, as Christ appears in his full worth and glory and glory and coming, we have that rest. That rest remaining. It's spoken of in verse 7 as well. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. And so we have that rest in glory, that rest in the Lord, that deliverance from him, that salvation from him. And what's the response? We break forth into singing. We are to praise his name. Yea, the fir trees rejoice at thee, and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since thou art laid down, no feller is come up against us. And surely chapter 12 really speaks of the end of Assyria, but that wonderful psalm of praise in the middle of Isaiah there. And in that day thou shalt say, O Lord, I will praise thee. Though thou wast angry with me, thine anger is turned away, and thou comfortest me. Behold, God is my salvation. I will trust and not be afraid, for the Lord Jehovah is my strength and my song. He also is become my salvation. We have that rest. We have that praise of our God. Initially, though, I thought we would finish our reading at verse 28. That's the end of this prophecy of Babylon and of the return. But they have something else that we need to consider. Palestine. Rejoice not thou, whole Palestina, because the rod of him that smote thee is broken. Very solemn, isn't it? They were also under the Babylonian captivity. But these are not the Lord's people. Just because the oppressor has gone, just because the Antichrist is removed, doesn't mean that those that know not the Lord will be released, delivered. They have no hope. None shall be alone in his appointed times. He shall slay the remnant. It goes through. It's a very dark picture. The need for the gospel to go forth is as great as ever. They need to be warned. Outside of that wonderful statement, the Lord is become my salvation, there is no hope. Even when the oppressor has gone, there is no hope. There is yet judgment. And what do we read? We read of that being cast into the into the lake of fire. And what do we read further on? Whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. But that's not where we end, is it? Verse 32. What shall one then answer the messengers of the nation? That the Lord hath founded Zion, and that the poor of his people shall trust in it. These are the Lord's people. He has established them, he will establish them, and they are to rejoice. Zion, spiritual Zion, that new great city of Jerusalem prepared as a bride for the Lord, will be there with him forever. There will be that rest remaining. May God help us to take heed and look to that one who truly is the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and worship him alone. Amen.